Hello, and thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Billy Newman Photo Podcast.
Today I wanted to speak to you a little bit about rendering out MP4 video. I know that's probably a pretty exciting topic for everybody. That's what I've been doing recently. I've been trying to kind of put all of that on this workhorse desktop computer that I'm using. And I'm trying to use first I was trying to use Lightroom, right? You're probably familiar with talking about Lightroom for managing photos and sort of working with them and editing them. It also has limited capabilities of working with the video files that come off the DSLRs that are just kind of commonplace with modern DSLR cameras. So bringing those videos over, they're normally some kind of MPEG container format, of which I've seen, I guess, MKV or, MKS. Is that a Chrysler? I don't know. That might be a different thing. But there's like a handful, like MTS or something like that. There's a handful of these different little like container file extensions that I'm trying to sort out. They're fine. They seem to open to most things. I'm not really having a big problem with it other than AVCHD. I'm definitely trying to sort those out if I have any of those raw ones around. But I have this library of videos around. Now, I appreciate having the original files. And if that's something that's important to you as a media creator, I definitely recommend keeping those original source files around at a higher quality. But for me, with a lot of elements of video, especially a lot of projects that are done, but maybe some things that are kind of, they're an accomplished project, but I want to keep those media elements around, but not necessarily in their whole quality by any means anymore. So I'm trying to go through and render those things out. And not necessarily about a quality thing, but just about an odd format thing. Like I was just explaining with MKVs and MTSs and 3GPs and MOVs, though those are quite common. But I'm trying to make the system just a little bit more uniform for the video experience of the videos that I have. I'm trying to render those out. I was trying to use Lightroom to do this. I was trying to use it in mass to render out and refile name all of these video elements so that I don't have any more collisions with these video files as I'm moving the file names around, you know, image 0001.mp4 overwrites image 001.mp4 created 2 years later on a different SD card that got formatted. Whatever it is, it's been a problem before. I probably lost media because of it, because of that error. So to try and correct that, I'm trying to go through and render everything out with an additional date name that I was able to add in Lightroom. But Lightroom kept crashing, or at least would not render the video that I had trying to get out from the Lightroom catalog that I had the video stored in. So it was kind of interesting. I definitely had like a lot of problems with that. It did a great job with a handful of the sets of video, like the 3GP, I think the MTS and MKVs, I think it worked through quite well. But any of these MOV files, it just sits at. It doesn't necessarily even lag. It's just not rendering frames. It just sits there like it wasn't asked to respond. The computer's processors don't kick up at all. It's not like it's trying to render out video, but not, or I don't know. It just like pretends like it didn't get asked to do anything at the time. So it's all the struggle of trying to render video. So I ended up dumping Lightroom because I was hoping that I could do some automatic file naming and file categorizing with Lightroom and have it do a bulk export of video under the format that I was hoping and kind of have it, you know, automate some of that file naming system and export settings and stuff. I ended up switching over to Handbrake because I was having such a hard time getting Lightroom to actually grab onto the video and do anything with it. So I've been having a great experience with Handbrake so far. And really, there's a lot of the tools in the more modern systems of Handbrake that make the file naming and recompression system quite easy, where you can set things as same as source and use file name as source. And that's working really quite well to kind of grab a file, put it in a render queue with new settings that are pretty automatic, where it's, you know, it's kind of like a 2 or 3 click operation to get a new video added to the queue. And so just earlier today, I added 100.mov files to the queue, which I hope are set up correctly. I think there's a couple of mistakes I made in there. We'll see how they render out. But I put those in the queue and I'm doing a test of it now. And that stronger computer, as opposed to my laptop, is really burning through those video frames like much faster. I think I was rendering out about 30 frames a second. So it's almost like real time rendering. If you were to think about, like, you know, 30 frames a second in the video, well, 30 frames got rendered of that video in just that 1 second. So it's going through it much faster than I'm used to in the olden days. It's kind of fun to see. Who knows where we'll be 10 years from now.
You can see more of my work at billynewmanphoto.com. You can check out some of my photo books on Amazon.
I think you can look up Billy Newman under the authors section there and see some of the photo books on film, on the desert, on surrealism, on camping. Some cool stuff over there.
I wanted to touch in today and talk about a trip that I just finished up going on out to Central Oregon, over to the high desert area in Eastern Oregon. I guess it's Eastern Oregon, kind of over near the Bend area. We went up to Smith Rock this last week and did some camping out over there. Had a great time. It was pretty nice. But we did the hike over there at Smith Rock, and I guess I wanted to do just a kind of short podcast about the area over by Smith Rock, some of the hiking that you can do, and some of the trip and photo stuff that we were working on over there. But yeah, had a great time heading over to Smith Rock. Took off for a pretty quick, easy weekend trip. You know what's great about living here in Oregon on like the I-5 corridor is you could just kind of jump over to Eastern Oregon over the Cascade Pass, which is definitely a trek and a drive. It's different than the just being on the freeway, but it's pretty cool. Yeah, jumping over the highways and getting over kind of into the backcountry in the Cascades, and then heading over the pass and then down into the high desert area of Eastern Oregon over there. So yeah, went through Sisters, headed over to Terrebonne, and then went into the Smith Rock State Park area. And really, man, the thing I guess I should say is, yeah, Smith Rock is just world-class camping or a hiking area. You really can't camp there. I guess you can kind of camp out in a tent. You can kind of bivouac there. I guess some of the rock climbers do that. But there's also like another spot. The area we camped was this campground called Skull Hollow, which is about maybe 5 miles away or so. It's really not too far of a drive. But yeah, hop in the car, go around the mountain. And then on the back side of that, you can hang out and set up a camp. I think it's the area we were at was probably, I guess it's BLM. Maybe it's like State Forest or something still. But it was dispersed camping areas, so you can kind of drive up this road, pull out on the side, then kind of walk your tent over and, you know, just a couple of feet and set it up, hang out. It was all free. And yeah, you're just sitting out there in the scrub of the sagebrush and on some lumpy ground. And I think there's like open range cattle that walk through there too. Other times we'd camp there in the past. I think Marina and I had been there maybe years ago, and we had camped just a couple spots up from the place that we were this weekend. We put up the tent, hung out there, had the car parked there, and then that morning we woke up in the tent. We could hear like a bunch of big footsteps around and sounds and animals, and we were thinking, oh man, that's weird. And we unzipped the screen on the tent, looked outside, and we were surrounded by cows. Pretty wild. So yeah, I don't know, the cows just kind of walked through in their little group during the night or during the morning, and ended up in the acreage around where we were. Yeah, kind of cool about open range cattle and stuff, but it was fun hanging out over there. Yeah, checking out the Skull Hollow campground was cool. Getting our camp set up over there was cool. Had a couple tents going, and took off, went over to Smith Rock, did the hiking trip over there. That was pretty cool. That's where we did some of our photo stuff. Most of the hike was like kind of a just a cool afternoon hike. It's really a great one because it's a couple miles. It's definitely challenging if you're not super used to hiking. Yeah, you could do it, but you should train up for it a little bit, or not train up for it, but you know, get ready. I blistered up my feet. I got some hot spots and stuff. So it's like, maybe, is it 3 miles, 4 miles? I'm not sure. It takes about 4 hours or so if you're kind of taking like an average sort of mellow pace through it. But it's cool. You know, like the lower part, you know, goes around like the Crooked River. Maybe it's only 2 hours. I don't know. But we went around the lower part, around the Crooked River, which is really cool. How the way that the area was formed is really like, if you kind of look at it from the outside, maybe the ranch land that's all surrounding it is pretty high, or it's higher in elevation. It's just kind of this flatter area. And then it comes up to the Crooked River, where it drops off into this rim rock canyon. And then Smith Rock is the volcanic remnant that's been left there as the erosion of the river is kind of wrapped by it and pulled away all the sediment that was there that would just kind of make it look like an average boring hillside. And so now you have these really exposed, like, I don't know, vivid kind of crisp volcanic rocks that are just alien to the activity that we see in erosion commonly across the earth here. So Smith Rock, yeah, pretty cool, pretty unique kind of spot to go hike around at. But yeah, really fun to kind of jump in there. Really interesting kind of spot to be. Yeah, I did the hike around the Crooked Riverside up to the backside where like Monkey Face is. That was really cool. We went with a couple of people that hadn't been there before, so we got to kind of show them that area for the first time. And then, yeah, Monkey Face is such a cool phenomenon because really when you come around that corner, it does anthropomorphically? I guess it's animal. Yeah, anthropomorphically look like that's when you make an animal a person, right? When is it when you make a rock an animal? I don't know that word, but it looks like a monkey. It just looks like a monkey's face. That's why it's called Monkey Face. No way. So we hiked around that spire of Monkey Face and started going up the Misery Ridge Trail. It's just a bunch of switchbacks to kind of get you up in elevation to get you to the top of the Smith Rock there. And walked around the top there for a bit and then hiked down the back side of it. Really cool spot to check out over on the Smith Rock side. There's a bunch of other camping and hiking and stuff you can kind of do there other than just the top over loop of the trail. But there's other trails that kind of go around the east side of the park. That's got some really cool stuff. And then we're just talking about hiking and taking pictures and stuff a little bit so far. But really the cool thing there is all the rock climbing stuff that you do, all the sport climbing that goes on. And I think that's really cool. There's really a lot more hikers there today than there were and there were sport climbers. There's definitely like a handful of people that were out there, but I didn't see, and it's probably because the conditions were, I think, scheduled to be pretty bad. Like, I think it was supposed to be raining a lot of the day, so I don't think a lot of people probably set up their rock climbing rigs for a day in the rain, but I've definitely seen people there in really odd times of the year, like super early March, middle of the winter, early April and stuff. Maybe there's better times of the year to do some of the types of climbs and stuff. But yeah, I was hoping to find some people doing like a multi-pitch climb. I remember seeing that a couple of years ago on one of the surfaces where you're just thinking like, wow, those people are hundreds of feet up. That means they had to bring their rope up once and then pull it all up and then lead climb it again and then like belay each other. It's just like, wow, how you do that? That's so wild. So yeah, really scary, kind of interesting stuff how they do all the rock climbing stuff. But man, I wish I knew a little bit more about it. I got into it kind of, I guess it'd be like gym sport climbing for weeks, not months even. And, it's fun. It's fun to check out, fun to learn about, but man, like being on the rock over at Smith Rock is a lot different. I got to go climb over there one time years ago and just like getting on the rock and trying to like feel out the routes and stuff is so much different than kind of going for that hold on the wall in the rock gym and stuff. It was just really interesting kind of getting that experience of being hot and cold and having all your like outdoor gear on and stuff. And, you know, you're just kind of exposed to the wind and the elements and stuff. And then you're also trying to like pull up this mountainside too at the same time. So it's kind of fun. It's cool getting used to, I don't know, trying to rock climb stuff, but man, yeah, interesting, doing the climb and being belayed and doing all that stuff. But as photo stuff goes, we did a couple 360 things. That was kind of cool going over to Smith Rock and shooting. I've been trying to get into some 360 photo work where, last year we did like a lot of video clips, which is really cool. I really like those stock video clips that we produced in a lot of places. And we shot a ton of photos too, which is awesome. But now I'm also trying to get into, a bunch of pieces where we can, I want to try and get like collections of photos. And then I'm starting to learn about where you can put these in like virtual tours. So you can put maybe 4 or 5 or I don't know, whatever it would take, you know, but you kind of go to the specific spots in a location or something. And then you get the 360 photograph and then you can kind of, piece those together as a tour. So you can go from one 360 to the next 360 and sort of this immersion. Well, so I'm trying to check that out, trying to learn about if that'll work for me very well. But yeah, I'm trying to do some 360 photo stuff where you take the photo, then you pull it into Affinity Photo. That's another program. I'm using it on the Mac right now. I think it's available on PC as well. It's sort of a Photoshop competitor. You can buy it outright, I think, for maybe $79 or something like that. It's really not as expensive as the Creative Cloud purchases for continuation. But the reason I guess I bring up Affinity Photo is it's kind of noted as one of the better tools right now to project your stitched 360 photo as an equirectilinear projection in the program, and then you can still use the editing programs in the program. So the new Final Cut Pro has an ability to project the 360 photograph while you're editing it, so you can add in new materials to it, like just plates of information that'll stay up in the 360 space that you're at as you move through it. It's interesting how it is. You can kind of stitch things into the fabric of the scene within Final Cut in the video, and you can heal your nadir point. So at the base of you is your nadir, at the top of you is your zenith point. So at the nadir point in a 360 photograph is where that tripod is going to be, or where you are going to be, you know, the photographer is going to be below it, sort of a thing. So that's kind of an interesting part of it, where you got to kind of go through, and I guess this is what Affinity is for, is you open up the photo after it's stitched, you open it in Affinity, and then you can go down and heal out the base there where your tripod was, or where the person was that was taking the picture, and then you can have this kind of full 360 photograph without kind of a block at the bottom that's just a couple people. So yeah, it's kind of cool. So I'm trying to open it up in Affinity and do a couple color adjustments to it, which is cool that you can go through and do kind of like post color correction stuff to some of the photographs. You can kind of do that with the 360 video, but you also kind of can't do it with the 360 video as well. You can kind of add you can add color correction like you can in Final Cut, but it's really not the same as photo editing, I guess, you know, obviously. But it's kind of cool. We've been having a good time trying to edit together those 360 photos. I'm trying to go through a bunch of the photos that I had taken last year as well and put those together. And I hope to, I don't know, what is it? What is that 361? It's skipping my mind right now. There's like this 360 VR. I think it's VR. And it's sort of like a YouTube channel for 360 videos and stuff. YouTube also takes 360s as well as a bunch of other places. But it's kind of a cool little photo and video sharing site for 360 content and social networking app and all that, you know, kind of stuff. But I put some stuff up there, and that's where kind of people that are specifically interested in looking at 360 images and content would go. Smaller site. It's kind of fun. So, yeah. 360 stuff, some photo stuff. Had the Canon equipment out there. I was trying to take some landscape photos. It was cool. The weekend weather was, I think, like I had mentioned, there was kind of a forecast of rain. Really, that was like some thunderstorms that were blowing across the Cascades. I think there was just a bigger weather system overall this weekend. Not to mention the Perseids, which I should get back to on another podcast. That was probably this, but they got kind of clouded out for me. Shoot, I want to see some meteor showers. So. Not talking about the Perseids, but I guess kind of going back. I don't know, just the camping stuff. It was cool. We were really happy that we got to go out and do the camping stuff. Sorry that we didn't get to see the Perseids, but I don't know. I guess we're camping out and stuff, so that was pretty cool. It was thunderstorms that rolled over the Cascades, and then we had these big thunderheads. We were really fortunate that I guess the big system, which I looked really active. I pulled up the weather map on Dark Sky, the weather app that I have on my phone. And you can see just this big red hot spot, maybe 25 miles or 30 miles to the northeast of us. It's probably just, you know, a ton of rain, ton of hail, ton of lightning. So really glad we didn't get wiped over by that. That's pretty cool. But really, yeah, it was a cool kind of textured night where there's just a lot of clouds and like a lot of kind of thunderstorms and stuff. It's cool that the airplanes were kind of coming in real low. They had to go around this huge thunderstorm system, so they were coming in real low and kind of making these sort of strange routes. But it's just kind of fun to see that. I remember seeing that a couple other times in the past when thunderstorms would come in and airlines would have to take just these kind of big alternate routes to get around those thunderstorm cells. So that was kind of cool checking out. We were taking pictures of it as the sun was going down. There's a rainbow kind of right as the evening was coming to a close over our camp. So that was pretty fun. Got some cool pictures of that. And that's what I love. I love that time of a day, or, you know, right at the end of the day. It's a certain type of lighting effect that happens when there's really like mostly clouds over the sky. But right as the evening, the western sky has a gap where it's clear and the sun is able to shine through that pocket there. And you get a lot of light that bounces back between the cloud surface above you and the ground below you, where you're kind of in this little pocket where it sort of reflects against itself. But you get this kind of warmer, sort of diffused tone around everything. It kind of changes the way the shadows are. It's different than overcast, you know, where you get a diffusion of the shadows. But this one, you get a really crisp kind of saturated quality to the light. And it's a lot better than, I think, the softer sort of white light that you get in the diffused circumstances of overcast days. But yeah, you get a lot of cool kind of rich contrast in those landscape photos with that kind of lighting condition, sort of during that golden hour time with the right kind of cloud effect and stuff. Really beautiful, really soft, kind of easy to expose for photography kind of light. So yeah, beautiful spot to be, really kind of surreal, colorful looking location and evening. And yeah, fun hanging out, watching the thunderstorms, camping out, getting rained on, maybe getting hailed on a little bit. All part of the experience of being outside, being in Eastern Oregon. Definitely got a little sunburn, sore, all the rest of it. But yeah, good going out and camping out and stuff. You can check out more information at BillyNewmanPhoto.com. You can go to BillyNewmanPhoto.com/support if you want to help me out and participate in the value for value model that we're running this podcast with. If you receive some value out of some of the stuff that I was talking about, you're welcome to help me out and send some value my way through the portal at BillyNewmanPhoto.com/support. You can also find more information there about Patreon and the way that I use it. If you're interested or feel more comfortable using Patreon, that's Patreon.com/BillyNewmanPhoto. I've been working a lot in Lightroom stuff. I'm trying to like develop a lot of photos, like with the travel stuff that we did, the trip and like the trip that I did with my dad out to Christmas Valley and some of the stuff around like the teepee rings that I was photographing. I'm trying to like edit a few of those. And I've been doing like most of that in Lightroom, but I've been trying like a couple different other pieces of software. I haven't really gotten super far with it. So we got to do more research. This will be an ongoing segment for our podcast, which will be fun too. We should try out some betas. I don't know what we can really get a hold of. There's Lightroom. And so like there's some news about how like Lightroom is switched over to the Lightroom Creative Cloud, which is going to be sort of a cloud-based photo editing system. I think it's going to be a little bit more lightweight. I think it's going to, you know, be a monthly subscription system. And then there's also going to be Lightroom Classic, which is going to be the current Creative Cloud professional Lightroom system. And I think that's going to be like your disk management system, like how to put files onto your computer hard drive and how to edit them and then how to like process them out and put them somewhere. So that's still going to be around and I guess going on, but it's only going to be subscription system from now on. And I think that's kind of pushed a lot of people, including myself, to consider like what other editing options are going to be out there for like file management systems for your photographs. And there's a few new other systems that are coming up that also seem a little bit more modern in some ways too, that I think have been kind of interesting and it's been cool checking them out a little bit. One of them was Capture One, and you and I had looked at that one a little bit.
Yeah, you had shown me that one a little bit when you put it on your computer.
It's cool. I want to learn a little bit more about it. I know there's a lot of content out there about it. There's the Phase One camera system. Have you heard about that? It's like
a little bit
medium format digital camera system. It's real expensive, real nice, apparently. I only know like a little bit about it, but those RAW files, they're really immense medium format digital RAW files. And so to process those, they kind of constructed their own editing software that was this Capture One software. And I think it was supposed to be a more modern system of rendering your RAW file adjustments. And I think it was supposed to be kind of tuned specifically to the RAW files produced by this Phase One camera, which is an interesting piece of software. You know, it's really technical. And I see like a lot of professional photographers kind of not shifting over to it, but at least I see it popping up a little bit more in sort of a higher end fashion system, or like people that are using Phase One systems, or a lot of Sony systems. There's, because I think it's sort of specific to the camera RAW file that's produced. It's sort of strange, right? Like I think it's built for the Phase One camera.
Right.
And like for a lot
of, for their file types.
Yeah, for those file types and for a lot of the Sony file types. So I think a lot of like the Sony photographers are getting the Capture One Pro software, and they make like a free Sony editing software that's a little bit stripped down. That's like the, you know, the Sony Capture One Express or something like that. Who knows what it is, but I pulled that on my computer. I've been messing with it, and I pulled like the demo for Capture One Pro, and it was cool kind of messing around with a different RAW editor. It's different than Photoshop, different than Lightroom, but it's still kind of like the same like panel and slider idea. You have a panel, you have like hue and color and sharpness and haze and whatever, and you can kind of make some adjustments on it. But it was interesting doing something different with the RAW processing. And I guess it's supposed to be faster, sort of the idea, or it's supposed to be a more modern system.
it's one of those things where like Lightroom was built years ago, like back in 2006, 2007. And I guess there wasn't the ability to throw a lot of processing over to the graphics processor. I don't think like it was as important back then to use your graphics processor for rendering and processing and crunching some of the graphics stuff that you had to
sure.
do. So I think a lot of that, you know, was built to like run and process the raw files through just the main processor. So I guess there's a lot of things about Lightroom that just are made to run really slow, given the modern computer architecture that people are using or that people are developing on. And so I think that's where like there's an advantage to maybe some future new Adobe software, but also for some of these current players that are trying to do some of this photo editing software stuff, like the other one, Affinity Photo, which is one that I think you'd seen a little bit, right?
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've not put anything on my computer to try out yet.
I haven't put anything on. I know it looks like there's a lot going on there. It looks like, and I hear a lot of people are talking about how impressive the iPad app is. Like if you have an iPad Pro, I guess like a modern iPad, the Affinity Pro app on an iPad is really powerful for tablet.
Yeah, editing. For tablet.
Yeah, editing. And you can do a lot of stuff like with the pencil, the Apple Pencil, or with your finger. To do like healing adjustments, a lot of stuff like that, that you really couldn't do with software outside of Photoshop before. So it's cool that they made like some progress on that. And I guess Affinity Photo is also producing a digital file management software to go along with Affinity Photo,
okay.
which is really like the Lightroom part of it. Like
yeah,
the ingestion.
I was gonna say, kind of be like Lightroom.
I think it's the Lightroom part and the part where you can apply adjustments to multiple files at the same time.
Oh, sure.
Stuff like that. I think it's like a lot of those features that they're trying to build out this year because of the changes that Adobe's made to the Lightroom system and how they're changing it over to like the Creative Cloud system and the, you know, kind of Lightroom Express system.
Yeah, not really as much of a pro tool.
That's what I've heard of
it. That's
what
it sounds like.
Yeah. So I think that's why a lot of professionals are a little bit unhappy with that adjustment into their workflow. You know, they're just looking for that professional system that they have to increase and get better in the ways they need.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think Adobe's trying to hit a wider market of hobby photographer or Instagram. You know, kind of it's more about like filters
basic,
and adjustments. Easy. Yeah. Yeah. One click kind of adjustments.
Yeah.
Sort of things. Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how that ends up going.
Yeah, it will be interesting. You know, that's sort of the shift in modern computers in a lot of ways. And if you were working an iPad, I bet it'll be swell. I bet it'll be pretty cool,
sure.
You know, to run a bunch of photos off on an iPad through that system. It, you know, probably work
it's
okay.
Stuff through the cloud.
It'd probably work okay. I don't think it's really the direction that I'm going to go.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It just doesn't really seem like it's the right zone.
That was what I was thinking. I'm hoping that the change really encourages these other companies to develop their products more. I was hoping there'll be something to kind of replace what Lightroom is right now.
Definitely.
Because I really like Lightroom.
Before Lightroom, there was Aperture that was built by Apple.
Sure.
And then they stopped producing Aperture. I don't know what's going to really happen with Lightroom. I'm sure that it's going to stick around, and I'm sure it's really going to be like top of market share for a long time for photographers editing software. It'll likely kind of remain in my workflow for a long time too. I was looking around at Capture One. It's not the thing I really want to use.
Yeah.
Affinity, there's some future, you know, but I don't really know. There's really not the thing that I'm looking to use in the way that I use Lightroom right now.
That was what I had noticed when I was looking through other photo editing software. It's really like, there are a lot of things that look cool and like they could be something useful.
Yeah.
But it's just not really, it just doesn't seem like it's there yet for the kind of editing that I'm trying to go for.
We'll see what pops up in the next year. And, you know, I guess the cool thing is like the given version of Lightroom that I have right now is totally fine for me.
That's the thing.
I know. Yeah. These new versions.
I just have this old version of Lightroom anyway.
Yeah. They come out, but I'm still always happy with the older one for a long time. So I'm kind of interested. I'm really only interested in buying software that I own. I'm not interested in leasing software,
even as a
working professional, even if I'm making money from using the software.
Yeah.
It's got to be a real special kind of business software license that I'm working. But it can't just be.
Yeah, I don't want to rent software.
It can't be my color correction software for my photographs. I need to own that.
Yeah, that's your tool.
That database. Yeah, it's yeah, that really kind of thing.
Yeah.
And for as much as I'm working it, I think I need to have it. It's not a service.
Right, yeah. It's just something that is yeah. part of your daily workflow.
I get paying for storage, paying for a website, paying for hosting, paying for processing, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't want to pay for the thing in total. If it's just raw processing and color correction and, you know, cropping and exporting of a file, like there's a lot of image editing systems out there. And everything I can do it, you know, on an older system. But I'm interested, if we go forward with some new software, I'm interested in trying like Affinity or, you know, one of these other more modern, just buy outright systems. It's like,
yeah,
it's like $100 or something. Like there's Pixelmator Pro. That's a new program coming out.
Yeah.
And that's supposed to be kind of a Photoshop level replacement for stuff. I think that's like definitely when you're like working with layers, working with, you know, textures and stuff.
Yeah.
You can do a lot with it. Yeah.
I think that I had looked at that one really briefly. And yeah, that one is more like Photoshop.
Yeah.
Or has more of the like Photoshop capabilities
yeah.
in it.
Yeah. I heard people are really into that or like really surprised with the level of quality that they can do it and the speed that they're able to process that stuff as like what we're talking about. It's built to work on metal. Like I think a couple of these things that we've been talking about are Apple apps. And I think metal is that system where it writes really quickly to the graphics card.
Right.
Yeah. So what is that? I can't remember that. Can't remember the names of it. These graphic layers, these graphic options that used to work. But yeah, this is supposed to be like a way faster system of processing some of that graphic stuff. And I guess it's supposed to be a big benefit. But that's the sort of thing I want to try out with you is that. And I want to try to kind of invest in that stuff just because we would own it. We'd have the license. We get to use it, you know, right. for as much as we'd want to. But yeah, we should try and check it out a little bit. I think it would be kind of fun to get some of these softwares and just do like little videos about it.
Oh, that'd be fun. Yeah. Just like trying it out, checking it out.
Yeah. Like, hey, like we're photographers.
Yeah. What's it like to work in Capture One?
Yeah. And we just kind of
let's check out these tools that are hard. Yeah. That'd be fun.
Yeah. But I want to try some of these things. I want to try like, you know, check out and see if some of these other tools are better or are more modern or kind of make a different, more creative result.
Yeah.
There's a bit of that in Lightroom where you seem to kind of fall in like a little bit of a rut of like how Lightroom edits a photo.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
You know what
no
I mean?
Kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can get a little stuck in routines of just like how you kind of have to adjust it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a little bit of that. And I'd like to see if there's some new thinking around that workflow that makes it a little bit or breaks up my creativity a little bit, makes something mm-hmm. a little different. So I think it's worth it just in the sense of that kind of investment. But yeah, overall, I mean, everything's fine still. I'm one of those people that kind of says, yeah, use the older or use, I don't know, Adobe Camera Raw if you have to. It's probably like most of the adjustments that you need to do anyway, I'd think. I'm not really big into retouching stuff, you know, but like I think you need to like work a raw file.
Yeah.
Process it, color correct it, make something out of it. So yeah, I think there's a lot you can do just with about anything, but it's kind of interesting just seeing like some of these new softwares come out and how they're being developed. There's another one like On One. It's up in Portland.
Yeah.
It seems like a Lightroom competitor is sort of the idea behind it. I've not really gotten into it. I think they had like a beta come out and I was a little confused about how to use some of it. But really, again, like that's the main thing I'm saying is all these new photo editing softwares, it's like I'm kind of confused how to use it. I'm so ingrained in using the stuff in...
just the Lightroom.
In Lightroom, yeah. Yeah. And it's been really cool using Lightroom. Or, you know, it's just been like what I've gotten used to for a long time. So I know. So we're kind of making a transition. But it's not bad.
Yeah, it'll be interesting just checking out some of these new things.
Ooh, yeah. I want to check out more stuff with you. I don't know. We'll have to figure it out. We got to figure out some new editing stuff. It'll be fun. But really, I think for a long time, I want to jump into a bunch of these raw files that we have from the last month or so. One of them is I want to try and compare presets. This is something we haven't really done much before, but I want to try and get into some presets for Lightroom stuff.
Yeah.
And I want to try and do a little investment into like Affinity or into Pixelmator or, you know, one of those other alternatives. And I think with Affinity, at least, there's a bunch of preset systems for the photo editing stuff there, too. And I want to try and compare them a little bit or run some of our other photos through it and see, like, what kind of creative results we get by, like, working with some of these preset packets over in Lightroom or some of the new stuff that we could do over in Affinity. It'd just be kind of cool to try and experiment a little bit with that.
Yeah, I think that would be cool to get into the preset stuff a little bit. I see that as, like, a huge part of a lot of photographers' workflow.
Yeah.
I think I'm curious about like what that is like to use.
I'm pretty interested too. I see tons of people on Instagram kind of promoting their preset systems.
Oh yeah, selling their preset packages.
Oh yeah, a lot of that.
I see a lot of those.
I don't know if I'll do that so much as watch a YouTube video about how one built such and such preset package.
Maybe that's a little bit more what I'm interested
yeah,
in.
Yeah, there's lots of stuff out there we can find that could kind of be a creative start for us to find something to do. But it's interesting to see that the levels of editing that go into some of the color corrections that happen on these photographs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, some levels of editing that I'm not really familiar with, really. So I guess there's a lot that I should learn about it, you know?
Really? Like, that's a big part of why I'm interested in seeing other people's preset packages.
Yeah.
I just want to understand for presets that are for photos that I think look better.
Oh yeah.
Like good.
Right.
I'm just interested in seeing like, what does that look like?
I'm trying to figure out.
What does that
look
like when someone else is putting a photo together like that?
I'm really trying to figure that out too. Yeah. What is the system of stuff on the side that you're looking at? What are the adjustments that are going on? Like what hue and tint stuff is being pulled around? Mm-hmm. It seems like there's a lot of stuff going on in there. Or like there's a few kind of granular changes into color correction stuff that I'm probably not getting into in my photographs. And I bet there's a lot of stuff that could be pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it would be really interesting to get into.
Yeah. I want to do some reimaginations of some photographs that I have.
Yeah, I've been going back through really like my portfolio, I guess, and trying to reevaluate what my best photos are and also just re-edit a lot of stuff.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Sharper.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm trying to get into better, finer editing.
See, yeah, I'd like to try and figure that out too. Yeah, I've noticed that that's like an element of the post-processing stuff that I really want to get into in a heavier way. It's like the level of editing stuff that I'm able to do, or just the level of choices I'm able to make when I get into something like Lightroom or Affinity in the future. So it'll be cool. We should really develop on that. It'd be cool to try and push ourselves on that a little bit and see if we can learn some new tricks or something new to do.
Yeah, I think it'd be cool to get into.
Yeah, man, I process probably 200,000, 300,000 photos in the last couple of years. I'm just like exporting stuff in it, but so with that, I don't know what I did, or you know, there's really not. It's just sort of automatic, or you know, like mm-hmm. there's just a lot of things that like aren't. So I don't know. Yeah, like, it's a weird thing. Like I've just kind of like moving through Lightroom for a long time.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of stuff that you probably kind of just like auto work through.
Yeah.
Or I know that's how it is for me. Yeah. With a lot of pictures,
and I think
I don't spend as much time on.
It's like when Tiger Woods was playing golf and like halfway through he needed to get a new coach for his swing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anything about golf, but yeah, he had to get like a new coach because he was like hurting his shoulder because his swing was wrong. So he needed to like correct his swing, but it's one of those things where it's like muscle memory, right? It's like so ingrained of like the way you do something, how you hold something. So it takes a lot to kind of break that habit of yourself, that muscle habit of yourself, and then kind of figure out a new way to do the thing that you do. So I don't know, we gotta kind of break ourselves a little bit, but I want to do a bunch, like as we get more and more into wedding photographs, I want to try and figure out some interesting stylistic things that we can do in those photographs through our post-processing.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've been really, cause that's what I've been doing for photo editing.
Yeah.
Mostly the last couple months is a lot of like wedding photo stuff from work that we've been doing.
Yeah.
And yeah, I really want to get into more of a stylized way of doing that.
I want
like
to
something
too.
That's a little bit more of a particular kind of quality.
Yeah, I really like that.
Because our photos are awesome. They're so good, but I want to, and really, I mean, that's kind of what I like about going back to like the Sony cameras and stuff. Like they don't even have to be edited. They look beautiful already, but
yeah.
I want to get into making them look a little bit more like a style.
Yeah.
Not just that it's a really beautiful photo, but that it's like
brand. I want to work with that
in a good way
too. I really want to be selective about our lens use.
Oh my gosh, I know.
I think there's a lot that we know to do in that we're not really able to execute on right now for some of our projects. And that's something I really want to change, you know, where we get some stuff in there that's that right piece. So I really want to focus on that. And yeah, I really want to focus on our post-processing element on top of that to really get the right kind of texture in the file mm-hmm. when we make it and the right kind of colors and, you know, just the right photo. And then I want to try and really do a great job in Lightroom or in our post-processing stuff to kind of pull that out and make it the most and make it look a little stylized, a little different and a little better.
Yeah.
It'll be cool. I think we've got a pretty distinct style with the things that we've been working on over the years, and I want to try and push that visually into just some new directions.
Thanks a lot for checking out this episode of the Billy Newman Photo Podcast. Hope you guys check out some stuff on billynewmanphoto.com. A few new things up there, some stuff on the homepage, some good links to other outbound sources, some links to books, some links to some podcasts, links to some blog posts. All pretty cool. But yeah, check it out at billynewmanphoto.com. Thanks a lot for listening to this episode of the podcast. Talk to you next time.